Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, listeners. I am thrilled to bring you today's guest. He is a friend, world leader, and X2 comedy fan. He is amazing. We're lucky to have him here in the Valley because he's a Colorado transplant, and he has been working at James Madison University, both as a professor as well as the director of the Center of International, let me read this right, Stabilization and Recovery to help rid the world of landmines. He is an amazing person. He's written several books. We're going to talk about one of those today. We're lucky to have him here. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Dawn Womack. Appreciate being here.
I know. I appreciate
it. Literally, I appreciate being above ground, as you know, but on your show especially.
Well, thank you, Ken.
Made a sunny day brighter.
Aw. Well, you make up my days brighter, you and your wife. We'll talk about that, too, here in just a second. But Ken is actually, he was a walk-on nose guard, right? For the University of for Colorado. And so after that, though, is when you became a double amputee.
Right.
And how did that happen?
So, I was, I loved University of Colorado, had a pretty good high school career, won a couple state championships, and I had knee surgery when I was in high school. So, just didn't have an opportunity, sat out my freshman year. Colorado got a new coach, Bill McCartney. Decided to walk on. I saw what some of the other players could do and played my freshman year, my walk-on year, got up to second string nose guard.
Wow.
Got moved to middle linebacker, had two shoulder surgeries right away, both spring balls, and that kind of ended my career. But the reason I say that is that's how I ended up losing both my legs in a weird indirect way where I wanted to join the Marines out of college. I qualified for OCS, Officer Commissioning School, to go to Quantico for a couple summers. And each time I had shoulder surgery, I was unable to physically perform because I was in a sling or in rehab. And so that was blocked off for me, but I still wanted to serve our country and I still wanted to serve overseas. So I joined the Peace Corps, ended up in West Africa and Mauritania, speak a tribal language. Ended up working for the UN. One thing led to another, which led me to Somalia during the Black Hawk Down time period, as most of your listeners will know. And then my vehicle hit a landmine, resulting in the loss of both my legs.
Wow. Now, at the time...
That's a long answer to your very short question, but
I
got a football and war in there.
I wanted to do that too, for obvious reasons. Yeah. There's a football mom over here. But I think the listeners will find that really fascinating. Now, your wife, Kim, is amazing also and a good friend of mine. You all weren't married at the time, though.
No. But I know this is being recorded, so I'm saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. That's my wife, Kim. Because I know she's a dear friend of yours and still listening in. So she's definitely, in my opinion, the most beautiful woman in the world. We're dating, and when I went to Somalia, realized I couldn't live without her, and I drove one weekend back to Kenya, and I called her from a landline. This is pre-cell phone. Asked her if she wanted to marry me. She said yes. Super thrilled, super charged. Went back into Somalia, and that's when I got blown up. And lost my foot on impact in Kenya, in Somalia, my right leg in Kenya. And then I still had one leg when I came back to the States, but it was badly damaged. And I just said to Kim, you're beautiful, phenomenal, awesome. My eyes walked on water. You're going to have a great life. It's not going to be with me. And she said, why not? Something along those lines. And said, we're going to be together. Don't talk like that anymore. And I couldn't believe on my wedding day, which is the greatest day of my life, that this beautiful woman married me. And we're definitely in love because the next 4 years, she had four kids.
I know.
And she swears she didn't have an affair, that they're half mine, and I'm responsible for them. So the oldest is Hayden.
Yeah.
And he played with your son, Landon.
Right.
Who's an incredible damn leader on and off the field.
Oh, thank you.
And allowed our son to spread his wings and had a great role model in your son. So he's 25, turns 26 next month. It's hard to believe where does time go.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's an incredible young man, your son. In fact, all four of them are. You have three boys and a girl. You all are empty nesters. But like you and your wife, they're all very accomplished young people. You guys have done an incredible job.
They're doing all right. They're doing okay. The youngest is, we're not technically empty nesters because our youngest goes to UVA, but she's in Hawaii taking remote classes, and she's going to come back for another year or two. But look at, she's my only daughter. And she could live at home as long as she wants. The boys,
they're out of there. That's right.
They're never going to be on the couch.
Yeah, I think last time I talked to you and Kim, they were kind of complaining that you treat the daughter better than.
Well, my boys, they said, you know, Dad, you think you're a great dad and you're really not. I'm like, really? Why is that? And they're like, well, to be a great dad, you have to treat everybody equally, and you don't. You treat Lucy differently than us.
I know.
I thought to myself, and I was like, you know, I'm going to continue to be not a great father.
There's nothing wrong with that. You got to have a daddy's girl. That's what I say. Yeah, your love story with Kim, if I remember right, ended up in Reader's Digest.
It did.
Yeah.
It was called Love Story.
That's amazing. I'm going to have to look that up.
So I think it was in the September 94 issue, you know? How did this beautiful woman, bright future, much smarter than me, man. I definitely outkicked my coverage on that one. And she stayed with me.
I'm going to agree with that, Kim.
Oh, yeah. You're saying I'm doing all the right things. We got an Oprah. You know, it's a story that we just, this is part of our life. It's no big deal. Like, we'll probably put like 50 things in front of that, or even like being on Oprah, in front of that. Raising kids, having friends, being together, being happy in our careers.
Yeah.
God is good.
Traveled all over.
Travels, man. That's like, I'm passionate about that. So like, I lost my legs. And as you know, Donna, up until about 3 weeks ago, I only had one functioning limb. My left arm. Because I had rotator cuff surgery because of those Colorado football things. And like, I could not, I thought, you know, I said, Kim, you know, go visit your parents. And she goes, no, I want to help you. And I was like, I don't need any help. But then I realized, like, I can't put my legs on with one arm.
Right.
And so she would have to get up and put those legs on. And that's a pain, man, because I get up early. And she did it. You know, she grumbled a little bit, but she did it.
She did.
Every day.
She's a nurse too, so that's been helpful over the years.
She's a workhorse, man. Holy cow. Her spot in heaven is secure. Only for a career, but being married to me.
We got to give her some kind of award for sure.
Yeah.
You know, after you lost your legs, sometime after that, you ended up working with Princess Diana on banning landmines. How did that connection happen, and what was it like working with her?
So I lost my leg, my injury was December 93, rehab for like a year, got into Georgetown 1995 to get my PhD, moved to DC, met an incredible man. Shout out to Jerry White. He's a professor at University of Virginia. Okay. He lost his leg to a landmine in Israel as a college student. And he was working in DC in a different career, and we happened to meet. And we both felt an internal desire to help other amputees around the world who don't have the blessings of our country and our health system and the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so we started a Landmine Survivors Network. And through that work, we met Princess Diana in London. And then when she came to DC, met her on her last American trip, ended up giving a speech with her. And then we visited with her in Kensington Palace in London. And then she joined us for 3 days in Bosnia, which sadly was the last 3 working days of her life. because she tragically died a couple weeks later. And Jerry and his beautiful wife, Kelly, also a mother of four. And Kim, a mother of four, married to me. We all attended the funeral together as guests of her family. So that was super special.
That definitely is. That's incredible to have that kind of opportunity to work with someone.
You know, it was her. It was an opportunity, but not setting aside her celebrity, which was significant. I mean, she was the most photographed person in the world, but she had an humanitarian impulse to change the world. A single mother of two joining us to go to Bosnia to highlight the needs of people with disabilities in Bosnia.
Right.
Huge. And it turns out like that's the way her life was. She was the first real celebrity to touch somebody with AIDS at a time when people thought you could transfer AIDS for touch. Yeah. Where people with leprosy, inmates, child bereavement. So she had it all. Like she was the pack. And she knew. She was just like, I want to work with you. The media is going to follow me. I know that. They've treated me horribly. I like they'll treat their life horribly by going to countries they normally otherwise don't go to. And more important, covering social issues they normally otherwise don't cover. So she knew.
That's great.
Brilliant. That's an example I try to set for my students is care about the most famous person in the world could care about a child with cerebral palsy in the slums of Sarajevo, Bosnia. Surely we could help out those on the margins in our own country.
That's a testimony to her big heart, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a blessing.
Oh, yeah.
That's some
it was a blessing to work with her.
I bet.
Like it helped us out so much as a result of her work with us or our work with her. Our two-person organization grew to over a couple hundred people.
Wow, I did not know that.
Around the world. We had six overseas offices and our headquarters was in D.C.
Wow.
Jerry White was the pilot. Awesome. Like his vision is scary. It's bold.
Wow.
And I'm like more of a impulse, wear my feelings on my sleeve, get out there with the people.
Yes, definitely.
That's what fuels me. Yeah. And it was a nice balance to a very strategic thinking man of a similar age. Each had four kids and awesome wives. And so it was a phenomenal team.
That was what I was going to get ready to say. That sounds like an incredible match to make such an impact. Just to give the listener some perspective and also to educate me, when we're talking about landmines around the world, how many, can you give us a sense of how many are out there and why this is such big work?
You know, in your question, sense was the right word because nobody really knows. But in general, it's about 80 million landmines are in the ground around the world.
Wow.
And they're silent, vigilant sentinels. They go off. They fire. They come alive when somebody touches them or steps on them.
Wow.
They lose an arm or a leg or in most cases the life. Not so much from the explosion, but from the blood loss.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And they've been using about, right now, those 80 million landmines are in about 75 different countries. Most of those countries are at peace.
Wow.
But the landmines continue to function. When soldiers go home, peace treaties are signed, the white doves fly, the landmines continue to function.
Wow. And when did landmines show up in our history? How old is this technology?
What a great question. It leads into the book I just published.
I know. I want to talk about
it. Did you plan that?
Too.
Wow. So the American Civil War was the first time that landmines were used on a widespread basis. Historically, people always thought it was World War I when tanks were introduced in 1917 and the British introduced a tank. And the Germans developed landmines to counter the tank. And that's what I believed until I moved to the beautiful Shenandoah Valley 10 years ago.
Right.
Civil War Central. A big Civil War buff, even though I grew up in Colorado. No Civil War there. My parents weren't Civil War fans. None of my siblings. I don't know what I drank that particular night in middle school. But I guzzled the Kool-Aid of Civil War. So I end up in the Shenandoah Valley. And shockingly, I find a little note that landmines were used outside of Richmond in 1864.
Where was that little note? Where did you find
it? It was a way marker. It was a historical marker in Henrico County.
What were you
called
doing
Fort
there?
Johnson. I was driving out from Richmond to Fort Harrison, which is a national historic site.
Right.
And you drive through these suburbs and whatever. And there's a, I stop at all historical marker sites. Mm. It's one of the downsides of being married to me. Kim would say one of the many downsides, but anyway,
Kim.
I got out of car and took a photograph and I said, I read it. And I was like, what? 1864. I had heard that landmines were used once in Yorktown in 1862. So that was the beginning of an 8-year, 9-year project now to research America's buried history, landmines in the Civil War. That's the title of the book. It came out in April.
Yeah, I got
came
it.
Out in April.
I got it. Right here. I'm going to show
2020.
Yeah. There's a cover.
So I just did my first book tour two weeks ago in Tennessee. And a lot of it was canceled there. It's a new subject for the Civil War, but the lesson learned is don't release a book in a pandemic. Because all the speaking gigs got either canceled or indefinitely postponed. New York City in the book, Chicago. Just talking to my publisher today that New York City is still not rescheduling book talks. But Chicago's on the book and all that. So that was awesome. But I'm on to my next book. Civil War is in my wake. Seen it, done it, wrapped it up. It's on a shelf. It's on Amazon. Great reviews. It was voted as one of the top 6 books for 2021 to read about the Civil War.
Yeah.
Uber proud of it.
Yeah.
But now I'm moving on to other issues and other subjects for working on 3 manuscripts now and 3 different books. So
you're a busy man. You're a busy man. This America's Buried History, Landmines in the Civil War, that was your, I want to say your 5th book you've written.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yep, it is. Good. You read the scouting report.
Trying to do my homework over here, Ken. This is a quote on the cover of the book, a thrilling and chilling read. I highly recommend it. His Royal Highness Prince Mirid Ride Al Hassan. Is that close?
Prince Mirid is from Jordan.
All right.
And he is the United Nations special representative on landmines around the world.
Wow.
And he's a dear friend of mine. We've done a lot of work over the last 20 years together. The royal family in Jordan has been phenomenal on this issue. Jordan, man, if I had a second life, I'll come back as a minister of tourism for Jordan because the people are just awesome. But my military book publisher, the publisher of the book, who's one of the largest military book publishers in the country, said, wow, we've never had a prince endorse a book before.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that. Now, in your book, before we move on with a couple other questions about
that. I just got a beep. So I got my.
Okay, cool. 20 minutes. Yeah, 20 minutes. Okay. I was wondering if that was me. You know, this podcast.
No, that was my automatic.
I was like, what did I do wrong?
And it's already been a half an hour.
I know. It goes by fast. Anytime.
Don Womack, you're amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You guys make it easy to spend time with you for sure. Now, one of the questions I had, is there any Virginia connections with landmines written in this book? Because there are any landmines of Virginia, I guess, is a better
Gosh, Don, you're asking the questions.
Yeah.
May 5th, 1862, the first American to die from a landmine was in Virginia.
Wow.
Now, landmines are the number one cause of our troops overseas, of our combat troops today, 2021. But in 1862, Virginia, unfortunately, has the, the dubious, it's the dubious history of having been the location for the first American to die from landmine, May 5th, 1862, outside of Yorktown. 1862, November, that was in May. November of 1862, the Confederates started producing landmines in Richmond, and the Confederate States of America government created a landmine group called the Torpedo Bureau. Torpedoes was the name for landmines back then. The first ever bureau or organization focused on landmine warfare. And some of the landmines were produced on Brown's Island and in Richmond. So Virginia does have a history. And the last time that landmines were used in North America, the Western Hemisphere of the United States, was outside of Richmond in 1865.
Wow.
In the spring of 1865. when the Confederates are trying to defend the capital of the Confederacy from the circling Union forces.
That's right, because the Confederacy was, they didn't have as many weapons as the Union.
They were outgunned and outmanned.
And that's how the landmine or the increase of the landmine happened.
The original landmines for the Confederacy were unused artillery shells.
Right.
And as the war went on, they started using artillery shells that failed to explode, what we will call unexploded ordnance today. So they repurposed artillery shells and other ammunition into landmines. So the Union never had to use landmines because they're on the offensive. They had deep budgets, massive weapons production capabilities. And the South did not have those production capabilities. And also the South, i.e. the Confederacy, was fighting sort of a rear guard defensive action. Most of the Civil War took place in the Confederacy, with a few exceptions, Gettysburg in Pennsylvania, Antietam in Maryland, and that's about it.
Yeah,
Monocacy in Maryland, which was a border state. But all the other war battles were fought in the Confederacy, and landmines are a defensive weapon. You use them to reinforce your defensive position, or you use them for a delaying tactic.
Right. And in the book, you have some stories based on journal entries from different soldiers that are incorporated in the book.
That was the only way to do this research was primary sources.
Yeah, those were
the horrifying effects of these injuries. A lot of landmines are designed to maim and not kill.
Yeah.
So I can relate to some of these Union soldiers. You know, they're trying to put their own feet back on. That happened to me. I was trying to put my own foot back on. The arms were coming off and you could taste your own blood in your mouth. I thought I had internal injuries. You know, I thought I was going to die out there in Somalia.
Wow.
But I'll turn my head and spit out blood while I waited for help to arrive. So I wouldn't choke on it.
I cannot imagine, but I am so thankful and grateful that you survived that, because you all are incredible friends in our lives. And you've made such an incredible impact on not just our, you know, here through JMU, but in the world. So I'm thankful for that.
You know, don't take second chances lightly.
That's true.
And you and I both know people who've passed away.
Yeah.
Due to no fault of their own.
That's right.
And why are you tapped to remain above ground? Why was I tapped and I got pulled out of line to meet the Reaper?
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out that mission and just doing the best I can with every day.
Yeah.
It's just a profound sense of humility and humbleness while we're here.
That's true. That's true. And we get to have you here in the Valley. You're at James Madison University. You worked in the Center of International Stabilization and Recovery for 10 years.
Good. Yep. I was a director for 10 years and a return to full-time faculty last year.
Right. Can you give us a career highlight in terms of what you feel was most valuable in your work as the director of the center?
Oh, wow,
and then now as a full-time professor of political science?
So I think, you know, 10 years, the Center for International Stabilization Recovery, we did a lot of work for the U.S. State Department on information provision. We produced the number one journal on landmines in the world. It's called the Journal of Conventional Weapons Destruction. We also produced the annual report for the U.S. government on every single U.S. taxpayer dollar that goes overseas to destroy ammunition. We also did a range of other projects, victim assistance, disability rights awareness training in Vietnam. Anyway, the highlight, your question was delivering the annual report of the number one donor in the world to make our world safer for everyone to walk and providing prosthetics to the disabled. We wrote it.
Wow. Well,
we produced it.
Yeah.
And I had a chance to deliver it at the United Nations in a meeting on the 20th anniversary of the Landmine Ban Treaty. And here I am, an American disabled by a landmine, directing a center, producing this report, and presenting it to the UN. And I remember that day, it was up in New York City, UN headquarters, and I was on the agenda for that afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I asked to be moved up. I moved up to like 10 or 11 a.m., left at 12:30, got on a plane, flew to Dulles, got in my car, drove straight to Harrisburg High School football stadium, changed in the parking lot, and saw my son play football.
Wow, that's a day.
That was the highlight. The highlight of teaching, your question, returning, I felt a pull to come back to teach, is the opportunity to help mold young people, especially now. They're under so much stress and we're in a pandemic. And even before that, with social media and all the noise, if I could just teach some major lessons that I've learned over life. Number one, know your blood type. I teach political science. That has nothing to do with the subject. Number two is, what are you passionate about? Don't live somebody else's life. Live your own. And if you can match it up with your skill set, you'll be undefeated. There'll be some losses there'll be some checks in the loss column, but make mistakes because they end up developing, building up who we are. In other words, don't be a couch potato.
I like it.
And number three, what's really hard, I'm sorry, I'm going way off.
I love it.
Show up.
Yes. Show up for life.
Show up.
Yeah. Show up.
Okay. For life. You can miss class now because it's remote and, you know, we're doing it Zoom. And I got like 170 kids in one class. I can't take attendance. That'd be like 15 minutes. Okay. And 15. Maybe you could skip and still pass. But right. You know what? You will know that you missed.
Mm-hmm.
You will know. You're maybe not thinking about your uncle or your dad or your mom who's paying for your tuition. Mm-hmm. But you will know. And you're only cheating yourself.
Preach. I love it. That's good stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's...
I want them drinking that Kool-Aid about life.
I like that. Well, you want them to drink that Kool-Aid about life. I love that. That's so great. Well, you guys, listeners, you want to get this book, America's Buried History, Landmines in the Civil War, written by Kenneth R. Rutherford. It's available on Amazon, correct, Ken?
Yes, it is.
So you can get it today and see the ties to Virginia and read his wonderful work. We have so appreciated having you on our show today, Ken. You are awesome.
Thank you, Don Womack. God bless you.
It's been such a blast. And now he's off to do more world leadery things. So we got to let him go.
Thank you, Don Womack.
All right.
Looking forward to seeing you again in person.
Same here. Appreciate the time, Ken. Have a good one. All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.